The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
It's very interesting. Traditional butter-flavored fudge.
Yeah, so there was fudges. There was nougats.
Okay. Well, I'm a fudge person anyway, so I think, well, if I had to choose between fudge and nougat, I don't know. Nougat's got a weird texture. Nougat, marshmallows, weird things out there that I texture-wise freak me out a little bit. Fudge okay. Less freaky. So,
look, I'm just a sugar person. So
this is true as well. This
sugar is good.
This is partly why we have a snack break now on the show because, well,
sugar.
Thank you. This is fantastic.
Never met a sugar I didn't like.
There we go. Mm. Handcrafted confectionery.
Yeah.
It's fancy, very fancy. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
Product of South Africa. Western. Of course, it comes from the Western Cape. Of course. Where else is it going to come from? Sheesh. This might be a nice company to profile as well for a small business. I wonder how.
I have an interesting company. You do companies. That's right. I got pitched someone, but I don't do companies, but you do.
I do companies. I do people. It looks very nice.
You do people?
Yeah, I profile people. So we've got the executive lounge stuff and all of that stuff.
This lady makes molds of pregnant women.
Huh.
Of their stomach and then turns it into a bowl. That came out awful.
Thank you for the clarification. Okay, that's a strange business, and I suppose a business model I would want to find out more about, maybe.
Yeah.
So what's your business model?
That you charge money for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. And people have babies. So my sister did it.
It's a keepsake, I guess.
Yeah, my sister did it on her, well.
Oh, the business is called Keepsake.
Yeah.
Pregnancy keepsake.
Yeah, no, because my sister did it with her firstborn. Her secondborn's adopted, so it wasn't a pregnancy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she didn't care about the secondborn enough to do it.
Well, that happens too.
That happens to secondborns out there.
But then she's just got this mold on her wall where it's just they turn it into bowls and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, like very fancy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Pregnancy keepsake, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Belly bowl. Let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
Unfiltered. 98 are currently collapsing.
Privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studio.
So not even Buffett listens. To Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
But 1 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
Ken, there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Hey, introduce me.
I'm Jimmy Munaha. Yeah.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Welcome to Insider Exchange. We are nearing the end of the year. We are fighting year-end fatigue. We're desperately trying to keep ourselves off of beaches, and it seems we've gone back to normal. The G20's over, robots aren't working, and potholes are back. For our American audience, robots are traffic lights. Yes, we have quite the American audience, actually, despite the wonderful things that we have said about their choice of president. But I suppose they've had some reflections on our choice of president in the past as well. So yes, we're back to normal. Business as usual. Yeah. The potholes are back.
So I live right here in Rosebank. My weekend was just and it was weird. Initially, there'd be like there'd be motorbike outriders and cars and an ambulance. And yeah, by Sunday afternoon, it was just like a cop car in the front.
There we go. They're like, okay, you can see yourself home now.
I think we had the PM Keir Starmer staying with us across the road.
Wow. Okay. Mm. Yeah, I think we managed to pull off a G20 without a hitch. We'll get into that in a second because we're going to dive straight into useful updates, and it is part of our useful updates. So let's kick off useful updates, and we're going. First update, let's start with a G20 update. We have a declaration that was not supposed to be signed, according to President Trump, Mussolini.
You don't come to the party, you don't get to dictate the snacks.
We got new name, thanks to Chester Missing. It was Nachi. Nachi versus Cupcake was what was trending according to Chester Missing. So thanks for that. Thanks to Conrad Koch. For
and Cupcake did but win. I mean, he got it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he got his declaration. I mean, some people are saying it was actually just a chair's note. No, it was a declaration. So I got to say, it turns out I didn't know much about the G20 and how it operates. Now I know a whole lot.
We've learned a lot. But we've also learned that South Africa has, or at least this presidential administration, has been very good at exercising diplomacy on a global
stage. See our strength. If we had, someone said it on Twitter, I don't know who, if we had president and prime minister, CR, I mean, I remember him in the 80s running rings around the miners, Anglo and stuff, as president of National Union of Mine Workers. That's his skill set. Unfortunately, not, yeah.
Well, that's his skill set as a president as well. 25 basis point cut. We spoke about this. Yes. I don't know though. I wanted 50. I know we were optimistic. I know 50. We're never going to get 50. I know.
Unrealistic. I don't know when last. We used to have 50. Hey, I remember when we used to get 1% or 2%.
Yeah.
That's no longer happening. 25, no. I mean, there we go. In the
it's
bag.
A victory,
so
right?
We're 1.5% off the pandemic, well, the post-pandemic highs. Mm. And a million rand bond is $1,000 cheaper.
It's a good thing. It's one thing that we can hope will continue. I mean, going into December, we've got the Fed, and then we come back in Jan potentially with another rate cut, but we know that with the inflation targeting band and the fact that inflation is still punching at 3.6, we're not going to get Jan.
This was our MPC saying we're not grumpy. Lies.
They're like, here's some Christmas spend. We'll deal with you in the new year. Mm-hmm. Japanese yield curve.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Which about it?
The Central Bank of Japan. Well, that and the fact that they have now agreed from a central bank perspective to just allow it to play itself out a lot more relaxed. This is almost releasing some of the constraints that they've had around the Japanese yen. But what this is doing is spooking the markets, because now the market is like, wait, what do you mean we're going to go free?
The new metal head. The problem that Japan has is a small matter of debt to GDP. Mm. We get dumped on because ours is like in the high 70s.
Yes.
Japan, over 200%.
Much like America, over 130%+, I think, if not more than that. But yeah, we get told 70%, 77% is ridiculous. You guys
world's
can't gonna do that.
End.
Absolutely.
This is, to be clear, we won't go down the rabbit hole, but this is the duality of what's good for us is not good for you.
Mm, that's true. Next update, Walmart is finally open.
Yeah,
opened this weekend.
I took
a swing by that side of the world.
Tell us.
And the lines were excessively long.
Is it all that funny blue?
It is, but here's the thing. On. I was confused about the launch itself, right? So you're coming into a market where you're the last to enter. You've got competitors to compete with. You only open one store, and then you bring none of the American-led products. The whole reason behind bringing a foreign brand into a new market is to showcase what you have
mean
back
like
at home.
A 14-kilogram thing of grated cheese?
No, just bring Captain Crunch cereal or something basic. Really, not that difficult. But we can do a deeper dive around that. I think from a Walmart strategy perspective, they may have missed the boat there. But alongside that, I want to touch on Pick
and
Pay. I didn't buy anything because all of the stuff they have already is stuff that's already in the country.
Okay.
I can just get it at Checkers. That's it. Pick and Pay is looking to go a new route in terms of new modeling. They've launched a new look hypermarket in Klerksdorp. So I think as part of their revamp strategy and repositioning strategy, Klerksdorp seems to be a good market for them, I suppose. Perhaps it's a good, they probably look at the numbers and say, this is our store that's performing.
I went there once, did an event at a casino in about 2008, never been back. Probably Klerksdorp.
Never been back.
Is it Klerksdorp? It was Krugersdorp. Not even, okay, I don't even think I've been to Klerksdorp.
Different places, right?
My bad, sorry.
Krugersdorp is closer. Klerksdorp is on the way to Nampo Boerterval. You go through there if you're going out that way. But that's not the update. We're moving. Ooh, we are dangerously low on time and we haven't even taken a halftime break. We're going to take a halftime break at this point and see if we can wrap up the rest.
Klerksdorp's close to Orkney.
Yes. So you got Nampo, Orkney, Nampo.
Anything about what I know about Orkney, that was a TV show.
I never knew a TV show, but Klerksdorp of Orkney is very small. It is weirdly small. And I don't think I could live in Orkney. And we're back. We definitely don't have enough time to get through the rest of the updates. We're going to keep trying, though. BHP, back for more Anglo, and then not back for more Anglo.
Like,
that was the weirdest announcement.
I mean, I didn't even see that they were coming. I just saw that they'd left. I'm like, guys, I didn't know you were here.
Right?
Anglo's going for tech.
No weirdest time. 24 hours. Didn't make sense. BHP Billiton came back, said, we're coming back with another offer for Anglo. Then, subsequently, a couple of hours later, said, no, we're not coming back for another round of Anglo. We'll see how that goes.
They should have.
They should have.
Let the shareholders vote.
Well, I suppose maybe they might not get it the same way. Maybe they're just afraid of rejection, like what happened the first time.
Okay.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. Next update, Bahrain being downgraded. We've been seeing South Africa and a couple of other countries being upgraded. Interesting that Middle Eastern country in the form of Bahrain being downgraded from a ratings agency perspective.
Okay.
Excessive debt levels, those sorts of things.
Very
bizarre.
Two things. Now I know how to pronounce it, assuming you're doing it right.
Assuming I've got it right, yeah.
Don't they have oil?
They do have oil. This is why it's such a weird downgrade.
But oil's at like $60.
They should still be making money.
They should.
They should. I don't get it.
You've got to say, mining in the desert is easy, right? You just scoop some sand. No, but think about it. Like, there's no rocks, there's no ocean.
That's it. You don't have to blast through anything. You just got to drill down.
Yeah, scoop some sand.
Who knows? Nobody knows. Bill Gates selling Microsoft. Right?
It's selling down his stake in Microsoft.
Yes, selling down his stake in Microsoft.
But he's been doing that since the 90s.
Well, when you own the entire company at one point, you've got to get rid of it somehow and realize some value.
Spend some time with your money.
Apparently, some of the money, or most of the money, is going to go towards keeping the foundation alive and keeping all of that in place. I don't think it's very bizarre, but it still leaves them with a chunky bit of Microsoft left even after the sale.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, he's got the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is now just the Bill Foundation, because Melinda now has the Melinda French Gates Foundation. So look, I think rich people giving their money away is a good thing. There are challenges to it, because truthfully, oftentimes rich people don't know what they're doing and they try and give their money away. I remember interviewing a guy once saying this was good, and he's like, nope, not always, because T's and C's, like, where does the money go? How do you do it?
Yeah, but also some of them don't actually give it away.
Well, there's that too. But if they are giving it away, I'm game.
There we go. We have clawed back time. Yes. Which means we have exactly 55 seconds left to get through the biggest update to hit South African fashion ever. 50 years later, we finally settled the debate, Simon. Ralph Lauren has bought Polo South Africa. Remember there was this disconnect between the two brands and one was using the other one's logo and this was a fight. And this has been ongoing since I've been alive. This is the only debate I've ever remembered related to Ralph Lauren and Polo. We finally settled. It's gone through the courts. Ralph Lauren has bought out the South African Polo brand. Huh. Done. Easiest way to solve the trademark issues.
Yeah, because it was the same little horsey thing.
Yes. I think one was pointing the other way, one was facing the other way. There was debate, and one was said to be an imposter of another.
Look, I never got to say, Polo never, it's like the same with the crocodile shirts. I mean, it's just a t-shirt, man, and then you put a crocodile on and charge a whole lot of money. Don't understand.
Don't understand it, but we have made it. We have made it well within time. For those that are listening to the audio, so we will not be in trouble this week. Apparently, we get into trouble if we don't make it within time. We don't know what kind of trouble it is, but that's useful insights. We're going to get into our deep dive. We're going to be diving into how much you potentially need to retire and how you could potentially explore doubling your retirement amount. Please remember, folks, that conversation is certainly not going to be investment advice, but tune in for it anyway. And we're getting into our deep dive. We are diving into retirement planning in some respects. We're taking a look at how much you potentially need to retire and what you could do to potentially double your retirement earnings. Please note, folks, before we get into this conversation, all our conversations, the show, the things that Simon Brown and Jimmy Moyaha say on the show and the guests on the show are not investment advice. Please don't say we gave you investment advice. We're just sharing our thoughts, hoping that they help and add value to your life, but not investment advice. That being said, let's get into the deep dive. Retirement is always such a weird thing because you never have enough for it. You always live longer than you budget for, and life just continuously gets more expensive.
Yeah.
How do you even plan for it?
Carefully, assuming you're going to live a long time. But anyway, when you say how to plan, I think the key thing is just to actually spend the time and the effort and really actually do plan it. I mean, small things like, what do you want to do in retirement? I mean, my wife and I are probably, I don't know, anywhere between a week and a decade from retiring. And we're, you know, pondering, like, where do we want to live? Like, what are the hospitals like? You know, it would be lacquer to live in a hut in the Drakensberg. There ain't no medical help out there. Those sort of, well, of you, issues and
you
questions.
You could have a helicopter come in for medical assistance, I mean, if you retire at the right tax
bracket. But I had a sore tummy yesterday. That seems like a big ask for but yes. But there's lots of questions around that. You know, where are the kids? What about, I mean, I got a group of friends who were all planning to, they'd all bought into a estate somewhere down in the, I think the KZN West Coast.
So probably like Plettenberg, I think. Yeah, there was a time where people were buying a lot of
properties. Yeah, and there were all the different friends were going to go down and then retire in the same sort of complex. Et cetera.
Lovely.
Those sort of ideas that went horribly pear-shaped. So there are lots of those sort of questions. And it's not all just money. Money's obviously part of it and a big part of it. And if you ain't got it, you ain't retiring. And do you have enough of it? Can you afford, is your wine in a bottle or a box? Although these days, like, you get fancy wine in boxes too, man. You get fancy wine in tins.
Which is another story. Another deep dive.
For another day. But it is sort of understanding what. And that conversation needs to be happening, like, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years before you're actually starting to get into retirement. I got a friend who's just had a kid and they're talking about it in 20 years' time.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing is perhaps as a starting point, is how soon should you be having the conversations, or how long do you need before retirement date? So if we set retirement date at 65 and assume two assumptions: one, how much longer you're going to live on the other side of retirement, and two, how many years before that 65 deadline you need to start working towards that retirement. I suppose those are the timelines you kind of work with.
I mean, that's the challenge. So assume 30 years, right? That's how long you're going to live. And if you know the date of your death, it becomes so much easier, because then you've got to, you know,
work backwards.
You just work backwards and it becomes quite simple. But I mean, frankly, assume 30 years. The stat used to be, if a couple got to 60, 50% chance one of you would make it to 90. But it's a 20-year-old stat. It's no longer, it's now, I don't know, more likely that one of you get to 90 and the second one will live a very long time too.
Potentially over 100. I mean, we are seeing people live longer.
Yeah. So, and that's the challenge. So that's the challenge of knowing how long. And I'm saying, you know, minimum 30, maybe 40, and T's and C's apply. How long before you should start discussing it? I mean, frankly, in your early, if you're retiring at 65, this is conversations in your early 50s with your partner, your kids, your friends, your financial advisors, your stockbrokers, et cetera, et cetera.
So something that's, for me, logic says, if I'm planning for 30 years after 65, I should start 30 years before 65.
And that's not a bad idea.
When you speak to financial advisors and asset managers and the like, those people that do provide financial advice, unlike what we do, they will tell you that the sooner you start, the better. But
in terms of saving.
The human side of it around that is, you don't always have a good job to start with, a good salary to start with. And there's always the argument, oh, pay yourself first and deal with the other things later. And perhaps we'll get into a bit of those details. But the reality is, the lived situation in a country like South Africa, which for G20 countries has the highest unemployment rate of any G20 country by a mile, is that the people that live in those countries don't have the luxuries of other countries where I can say, oh, I can just put money aside. People have got obligations, sometimes obligations they don't intend to get into in the first place, right? So it makes the South African situation a bit different. And I suppose that's why we want to take a look at this around, first of all, how much does one need, or how much would be a comfortable amount to retire with? And then something very interesting that came out in the Just One Lap newsletter this week around potentially doubling your retirement earnings or your retirement savings and how you go about doing that. So check that out. We'll put a link to that with this episode as well. But how much do we need to retire then?
Oh, I mean, moving parts, 20 times your annual expense.
See, there's a safe, comfortable amount. This is the thing, but that gives you a good idea of how hard you need to work.
But it also just scared 94% of the people.
Oh, absolutely. It terrified me just hearing you say that.
But, you know, 20 times your annual means you do a 5% drawdown. In other words, you take 5% out. So say you need $1 million a year. So then you need 20 million. And every year you take out 5%, which is $1 million. But assuming that you're getting growth of closer to 10%, it means that your money's growing. So you're beating inflation. So you act. And then you leave a bag of cash at the end. Now, I don't have kids. So like, my plan is to spend my last 5 cents, put my last glass of whiskey down and fall over. Because now you're leaving a pot of cash.
Yes.
So then you say, well, sorry, kids, you know, love you, don't love you. I don't know. No cash for you. Like, you know, I fed you for the first 20 years. So then you could do it on 10X. I mean, I was running some numbers also to get clever. So we all just think, oh, we get a Reg 28 and then we buy an annuity and stuff. But for example, you get at that age almost 35,000 per year tax-free for interest. Mm. So, you know, tax efficiency then says, well, hang on a second. You need to put X amount in there, take the interest payment out of that and lower your tax bill. And then you can kind of do, you can almost get it to, you know, 12-ish million. It can give you $1 million a year, maybe even 1.2. So lots of moving parts. And the big decider is, how long are you going to live? Assume 30 years. And do you want to leave money to your heirs?
Okay. So before we answer those questions, what if I only earn 500,000 rand a year? I don't even qualify for some of the bigger amounts and things. And I think it's very different to look at these earnings at a higher tax bracket where things like share options are involved and you're at an executive level. Then we probably don't even need to be having this sort of conversation. But if I'm a middle income earner, where do I go? How do I start?
So if you're earning 500 a year, you don't need 500 a year to live on in retirement, because firstly, you're not saving for retirement. Secondly, you've got opportunities to be cleverer with your tax now over 65, so you can take some interest income, et cetera, et cetera. So someone earning 500 a year might only need to retire on 400 a year because of lower, now, medical aside, let's park medical and look.
Yeah, because medical aid is just wow.
Yeah, and weird stuff starts to happen to you when you get old and stuff, and the bills do but creep in.
Yes.
But if, you know, someone on a currently on, say, 40 grand a month salary perhaps only needs 30,000 a month into retirement, which which means they need 6 or 7 or 8 million to comfortably retire on. And there's ways to boost that. As you said, and we talk around double your retirement. I mean, can you delay retirement? Can you cut back on expenses? Can you get side hobbies, side hustles? Mm. Can you, although retirement, I don't know, you want to start. Also, I don't know what you're going to do for 30 years.
No, but I think this is the thing. I think part of the problem is twofold, right? Is one, people get bored. But secondly, you actually do not have enough money to retire comfortably. And such, you're forced to get side hustles. You're forced to get a new income stream. People are being forced to get income streams while they have a primary source of income now.
I mean, there's that too. But I've got the perfect income stream for retirement. You live in a retirement village?
Mm-hmm.
Make edibles.
Okay. Okay. Expand on that side.
No, I'm not expanding any further. Said. You also, potentially, you could have a smaller home. I mean, that sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot that you can do, you know, that can pull the amount of money from before retirement when you start retirement. But what you don't want is to go into retirement and just have to sit in your patio every day or your balcony for the rest of your life, because it's going to be 30 years. So you spent 20 years not knowing what the hell was happening, and then you spent 40 years working like a crazed. And now you're going to spend the next 30. You want to have some fun.
Yeah, but you're also tired.
It's not cheap.
You're also tired from the 30 years or the 40 years of trying to save up for retirement, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You do want a break, but...
Hey, I'm tired and I'm not even there yet.
But when we look at retirement, I guess the conversation around building up for retirement is one thing. But for some people, you're already at retirement and you're then saying, okay, retirement has hit. It has arrived. I have not saved enough, or I thought I saved enough, because for the longest time I had that financial planner here. Mm-hmm. I had those savings. I had that Direct 28 fund. But going into retirement, and it's not necessarily that I'm living an expensive lifestyle. It's just that I don't have enough. And that comes down to everything from gender pay gaps down to how long I worked or all of that. And you see people now more and more, like you say, delaying retirement. Some people are not delaying it for fun.
Yeah.
I guarantee most people that are delaying retirement are delaying it because they don't have enough to retire with.
Agreeing on that 100%. And that's the horror thing, right? Is that you get to the retirement and, you know, to be clear, we have state retirement, but we are totally parking that because it doesn't pay any money.
Hmm.
It's 2000 and change, and the means test is the means test, you kind of almost always fail. But it is going to be, for most people, and I was going to say South Africans, but I think we can say this for globally, for most people, retirement's going to come as a shock because we haven't got enough. And that's a combination of not saving enough, not starting early enough, paying too much high fees, being put into terrible funds, all of those things that we know about, which are just going to hurt you.
So something you wrote in the article that went out as part of the newsletter, for those that don't know, at this point in your life, don't know where you've been, don't know what rock you've been living under, Simon Brown is the founder of Just One Lap. And yes, he does put those things out there for you to learn and listen through. So yes, we did say we're going to share that. We did say we're going to look at some of those key things. You've mentioned something very interesting around acquiring a new skill, which is what people are doing more. Same with delaying the retirement. In the process of your working life, I've certainly, and I'm not even near the 60-year mark, and I've acquired a multitude of skills, sometimes to the point where I wonder, am I using all of them or how am I using them? But weirdly enough, as an aside quickly, I had an interesting client meeting yesterday. Yes, I have them on Sundays occasionally. And I realized that the skill sets that you acquire, you might not necessarily all use them at the time that is convenient for you, but it's always good to just keep acquiring them because you never know when they're going to come in handy. You never know when you're going to need what skill or... So I think what you mentioned around acquiring a new skill, from that perspective, it's you don't always have to monetize that skill immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It is good to monetize because the sooner you can monetize, the longer you're able to monetize for. But sometimes just because you've acquired a skill, don't look at it and say, oh, well, that was useless. I don't know what to do with that. It might come in handy later on in life. Right?
Yeah, and there's lots of things. I'm going to give an example of my grandfather. So he retired in 1965. He had sold suits. That was his job. He sold suits at Green Acres in Durban.
Okay.
He also went to two world wars, but that's a different story. And he retired in 1965, and within like 6 or 7 months was like, yo, what? Like, yo. Like, he was tired of his balcony in Durban looking out over the harbor. So he started selling haberdashery goods, cotton, thread, wool, needles, those sort of things. This is the mid-60s, so he must have been writing letters to companies, and he got like distribution rights to the continent and stuff, and then started driving around KZN, and he then proceeded to work for another 29 years. Mm. And it became almost a full-time job for him. But it was just for him, it wasn't so much the money story, although, you know, maybe, but it was also just the active story. And I mean, I was born after he had retired, but I remember speaking to him when he was older, and he would say to me, you know, that he just needed to do something. Mm. He couldn't just sit at home and do crosswords and read the newspaper. 65, right? There's no TV. There's like movies. And that's
also, to be fair, retiring back then when a loaf of bread costs possibly 5 cents, maybe 2 cents, versus today where it costs 20 rand. Granted, there's a lot of differences around cost of living and how much you could comfortably. I think life was simpler back then.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a lot more now. I mean, if I think about the fact that you'd pay, what, on average 500 to 1,000 rand for fiber, and that's just to keep you connected to the outside world, retirement today, I mean, probably has different expenses.
He got his first car in the late 70s.
Hmm.
And he used to catch the train to Pietermaritzburg to go and sell to the Pietermaritzburg shops.
Wow.
And in Durban, he would catch the bus or walk, I suppose.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it was a simpler time. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hmm. I mean, 100%. And on the side hustles is that, I mean, there's a couple, and I'm not going to go into details because I don't know if they want it out there, but they do some stuff in the Rosebank Market on Sundays, and I chat to them occasionally, and they're patently retired, and they do it because they're looking for something to do, for something to keep them active, and it makes some money, and that's quite nice. They don't have a problem with that, but for them it's not about money, but for most people it is. For most people it's going to be about money, and that then, you know, it's also the skill set. I mean, you've got something that you can monetize, but being an entrepreneur is a whole different,
that's like a whole other ballgame.
Yeah, yeah. And frankly, most people aren't cut out for it. And that then is the other challenge of it. And what we do see in lots of places is retirees, particularly, they go back into sort of QSR, the quick service restaurant, says, you know, servers and et cetera, et cetera. But they're not doing it because they love being on their feet 12 hours a day. They're doing it because they need
the money.
They need the money.
I think another approach while we're looking at the side hustles and the additional income, and hopefully this helps, is to not try and have all of your supplementary income come from one side hustle.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you're putting strain. So in the same way you're diversifying your investment portfolio leading up to retirement, diversify your income streams into retirement. Diversify. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've seen some really great diversification tactics. And I think what works well in a South African environment is things that are affordable, things that are small, things that are incremental. So you might not necessarily see it as an extra 5,000 rand or whatever. But if you think about that and you say, I'm going to do three things that each earn me 5,000 rand a month, and each of these three things I'm going to dedicate, say, 1 week to each one. Mm-hmm. So granted, I have to work 3 weeks out of the month for that. It's an additional 15,000 rand that you might not have had, as opposed to saying I'm going to do one thing and try and make 15,000 rand off of that one thing. I think that's the one useful insight that hopefully we can provide here, is don't look at it all as everything must be centered around one side hustle, right?
Yeah.
And on that note, while we are looking at that, we'd love to get your thoughts. We've got a fantastic community. We mentioned this earlier at the start of the show. We've got a community that's spread across the world. We've got South African members of our community. We've got people in Europe. We've got people in the US. Please share your thoughts, because this is the engagement part of it that helps us all. I mean, sometimes you've stumbled upon something that's worked for you and you can share that with others. What have you stumbled upon as a potential side hustle, as a potential additional income stream that might be very low effort and yield some decent or some positive results? We'd love to hear your thoughts. We'd love to hear your comments or suggestions around perhaps what you've been thinking about exploring that you haven't had the time to explore. I think that's one of the things that people should be looking at. In the day and age that we live in, there's so much out there that is there for opportunity. Technology has done wonders to allow us to be able to tap into different things without necessarily having the skill set for those things up front. You know, I mean, I think about some very useful things I've been able to do with something like AI. I can sit and research an entire industry, an entire market that I never knew about prior to that, solely because AI allows you to aggregate information, right?
I'm writing an article and I drop it into AI to fact check it, and it comes back and says James Earl Jones is not dead. He has the link to Wikipedia, and the first thing it says in Wikipedia is he's dead.
So be cautious. There we go, right? Be cautious.
I like your point around it doesn't have to be big. So my gran on the other grandparent's side made the best fudge with little cherries. She never worked. She was one of those stay-at-homes her whole life type of thing. My granddad had one job his entire life. Neither of them got to age 66. Mm. And she made this really, really epic little fudge. And I used to say to her, oh, she should sell it at the school fete. And she didn't. So what I used to do was I would ask her to make me a lot. Because I was like, you know, a strong boy. And then I would go sell it. But it was, you know, it was just something that she enjoyed doing. Mm. And actually, when I think back to it, she might have enjoyed more the doing it for her grandkids, my sister and I, my one cousin, perhaps more than anything else. But I like your thinking. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Mm. It can be a couple of little things.
I think, to your point, Sian, I think we're going to leave it on that note because we need to get into the rest of the show. But on that fudge story, when you said that, I thought back to my days in primary school when we had what was Entrepreneur's Day, effectively, right? You'd come to school, sell stuff, they'd have a market for each grade or whatever, you'd do that. And for me, that was one of the first experiences where I realized, hey, you can leverage something that didn't cost you as much and make it into something else. Subsequently, I had a stint where I was selling sweets in high school. Those that went to high school with me will know this because I got into trouble with the high school tuck shop. Story for another day. Anti-competitive behavior. I've been dealing with the Competition Commission for many years, folks.
And it doesn't have to be fancy stuff like that fudge you got.
That's it. Yeah. It doesn't have to be fancy. It has to have utility. It has to be practical. And you also don't always have to sell things. You can sell your knowledge. You can sell your skill. You might have expertise in an area that nobody else does, right?
Edibles.
Edibles. I was going to say, I bumped into a gentleman who's run a manufacturing business for the last 7 or 8 years that has virtually no competition in the market, and he's looking to retire. But sure, edibles. Let's go with that. That's the deep dive, folks. We're going to leave it on that note. We're going to get into Make It Make Sense because some of these things don't make sense. And we're wrapping things up with our Make It Make Sense. We try and make sense of things, numbers, and information out there that seemingly doesn't always make sense. This week, we've got a couple of things to get into. The Hawks are now digging into, well, this is the first of the three things we're going to get into. The Hawks are now digging into the South African Navy over nearly R500 million. R500 million in irregular tenders, monies that can't be explained. Now, some of these investigations date back to 2009, which understandably is what, a 15 ago. Year period. Doesn't seem like it was 15, 16 years ago, right? Doesn't seem all that far away. Yeah. But one of them relates to a contract that was awarded in 2017, 2018, so less than 10 years ago. Just shy of R400 million, so R395 million. The bulk of it sits in this particular contract that was supposed to be for supplying the Navy with spares, parts, for those that are wondering, for surface and submarine vessels over 3 years. Now, South African Navy, whether or not we have a Navy that warrants that.
Well, yes.
And submarines.
We do have boats and submarines.
Okay.
I don't know.
Do we use them?
I don't know that they work.
Okay. See.
They might just be
right,
parked.
But we're going to supply parts.
Where do you park a submarine? Do you park it at the bottom or at the top? I mean, do you take it out and put it at the bottom of the ocean and park it?
You can't park it down there.
Why not? It would be space saving. It would be
space saving. But then, when you need to get to it, how do you get to it, Si? Now you're going to deploy something new to get to it, to get to the bottom, to go start it up.
That's why I'm not a Navy man.
Practically, do we even park them? Because, yeah, if you're in the middle of a war, you're constantly moving around, granted. No. But perhaps they sit on the surface, half thingy, and then they just...
Not sure ours work, but
we wouldn't know. Hence, we're trying to make sense of it. The other thing we're going to try and make sense of is, oh, and I love this one. Should we do this one? No, let's switch them around. No, actually, let's do this one. Let's do this one. We look at weird numbers, right? And we try and make sense of how we got to it. Remember the case with the Lanceria Holdings and the PIC and being paid to get out of a loan?
Oh, sure. That still hurts my head, yes.
Right? Here's another accounting transaction you might like. There's a municipality in Rustenburg, the Rustenburg local municipality, that was in a court case. And the court case was leaning in favor of the municipality. It looks as though they were about to win the court case. They elected to not see the court case through, but instead entered into a R156 million settlement.
So you misspoke there. R156 million dodge bribe. Carry on.
So effectively, what then happens with this settlement is it swings the decision from a positive number to a negative number. So it basically, you go from what you would have earned or what you would have saved.
You're paying out.
Now you're paying out 156 million rand because it looks as though from the merits of the case, and if you get, there have been legal opinions that have been expressed around it and all of that, saying that the municipality was on their way to winning the case. There was very little that was going to stop them from winning the case. Now, the municipality, the out-of-court settlement, including legal costs, is going to set taxpayers back 300 million rand. So you went from winning a case to now setting taxpayers back 300 million rand and paying out 156 million rand.
There's just no, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not the lack of accountability. Like, we've long since moved on from lack of accountability. Witness the 2009 Navy story that you just mentioned. We've now got to the place that, like, people just don't care anymore. It's like, yeah, look what we're doing. Hey, watch over here if you want. We just, like, there's no, it's like, no, shame's the wrong word. There's just no, like, no one cares.
So, for context around how the money is now a deficit, it looks as though the municipality itself would have gone on to earn 141 million rand is what they would have been earning from the settlement. Instead, they are now going to be paying 136 million.
Yeah.
So, those are the numbers.
Nah.
The last one, the last thing we're trying to make sense of, probably less controversial and I suppose less worrisome at this point, is 60 million rand that we are going to be spending to do some maintenance on Inkwazi. Now, for those that don't know what Inkwazi is, that is South Africa's equivalent of Air Force One. It is the presidential jet.
Can't we go speak to those people in the Middle East? They got a couple of spare ones.
They've been giving them away, right? Let's just ask for a new one. Hey, guys.
60 million to fix the president's plane.
60 million to fix the president's plane. Now, understandably, this sort of maintenance happens every 2 to 4 years.
Yeah.
It's significant maintenance, all sorts of things.
This happens to airplanes.
Happens great. There's contention around whether or not the repairs are being done by an approved repair, but apparently they are, according to the fact that... according to the fact that... so this is now going to the South African Defence Force, right? So they handle all of these things, and they say that the authorized service provider is approved in line with Boeing standards, so there's nothing to worry about there, despite the fact that they don't have the infrastructure to actually carry out the repairs. We'll come back to that. We'll figure that out at another time. The 60 million rand brought up something in my head where I thought of Air Force One, and I thought of other presidential planes and things. Mm-hmm. And granted, Air Force One, I believe, is a much bigger plane than what we have. The South
Air
African
Force
plane...
Air Force One is a 747 or...
It's a 747. It's a 747... Not what we have for the presidential jet. And our presidential plane often carries other dignitaries and all of that. It's not just the president. The question then, I suppose, here is, should we get a big fancier plane? Do we need
This is a Boeing 737.
737, yes. So smaller than the 747. Do we need to have more than one so that when one goes into repairs and maintenance, we're okay? I mean, I'm asking this on the basis of the fact that America has, 14 versions of their beast vehicle and countless versions of everything else. They've got a backup to a backup to a backup. So is that necessary for a president of South Africa? Americans are going to have their own opinions on their president.
Not. I mean, I don't know. One plane seems like a lot. I mean, and I appreciate sometimes it gets serviced and then he can rent a plane, which is surely cheaper than owning two. Or he could hitch a ride or
I suppose for a lot of it, it's a security thing, right? Sure. When you understand presidential level securities and you're dealing with foreign dignitaries and all of those sorts of things. Also, in the event that you happen to be in Russia and Vladimir Putin asks for a lift to NATO or a lift to the United Nations.
And then you really can't.
Then you kind of want to have a nice plane, right? You want to show your friends nice things.
Your plane's full, but you. But there's also, so Keir Starmer was at, I saw him on the TV at 6 o'clock on Sunday evening or 7 o'clock at G20. And then the next morning I see him in some factory in London. Like, you don't fly traditional.
Absolutely.
You can't be sitting out that queue at getting to the airport 4 hours early.
No, there's one person who exemplifies that. There's one South African who exemplifies that immensely, and that's Black Coffee. Shout out to Black Coffee. Because the gent can DJ in Ibiza, fly to Miami, DJ there, do a set there, fly back. He's probably working so hard that jet is tired of him. He's on that jet, so the jet's just like, dude, can you just take a break? But in that respect, it makes sense. I mean, if I need to be in a certain place at a certain time for a specific objective, as long as I'm able to cover the costs of the flights and the cost of the jets.
Black Coffee get that paid to DJ?
He's an international DJ. This is the thing.
But what do international DJs get? I thought they might get 50K.
Well, well, when you are a Grammy-winning international DJ who's had probably one of the best residencies in Ibiza's history, and you've now paved the way for a whole new generation to come up and do things differently in the music space. He's earned it.
I made bad choices as a kid. I was a DJ as a kid.
Si, there's a lot of things you've done.
Yes.
One of those does not include running, but I mean, there's a lot of things.
But I could have been the black coffee. I would be the white coffee.
It's not too late. We just spoke about retirement. We just spoke about finding new side hustles into retirement.
Sucky suckies at the old age.
There we go. You can feed them edibles, play sucky sucky, and we'll call you white coffee.
Retirement sorted. I told you it was somewhere between a week and a decade. Might be a week.
You know what? If this episode makes it to black coffee somehow, and he's willing to give Simon Brown some lessons on how to be a world-class DJ, I'm sure Si would be open to that.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. See,
mm-hmm.
there,
sure. Mm-hmm.
There we are. But yeah, back to the expenditure side of it. We got horribly off track with that.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a lot. But I mean, is it? I mean, I don't.
Is it? That's the thing. Is it a lot in the context of this?
I mean, if they do this every 5 years, it's $500,000 a month for maintenance. Planes need maintenance. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, mm-hmm. We know about mm-hmm. that. Probably more efficient. It's certainly cheaper than probably having to hire a private jet every time the president wants to fly somewhere.
Especially with his level of security detail.
Yeah, and he needs a biggish one for range because you can't be landing all the time to put more petrol in and stuff, and mm-hmm. you know, because we are an end of road destination down here in South Africa. Yeah, 60 million.
There we go.
I mean, Rustin municipality could pay for it five times,
and I'm sure Black Coffee could, because if we look at his earnings over some residencies, we can get to. It's nice when you get to $1 billion. But folks, this is probably the first time since we've had our Make It Make Sense that we've been able to make sense of the numbers.
We're getting clever.
We're mm-hmm. getting there, right? Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to leave the show because we have run out of time. But before we leave, we're obviously going to give you an unfiltered opinion. It would be horrible of us to try and leave you without one, right? So the unfiltered opinion of the week for this week relates to the CPW, the Crime Protection Wardens, aka Amapanyaza, the 6,000 wardens that were mushroomed overnight as part of a program that was put together by the Gauteng Premier. Now, they make our unfiltered opinion this week because we ask the question, have they been worth it? For 6,000 individuals who had 254 million rand spent on training that was then discovered to be incorrect training, the program thus far has cost us as taxpayers close to 2.7 billion rand through direct allocations and the trainings that we've mentioned. The figure could be closer to 4 billion rand, depending on what you're factoring in. This came up because last week, while walking through the G20s and mm-hmm. the security layouts, mm-hmm. I saw the CPW in...
I never seen one.
I saw the CPW in a BMW X3.
Whoa.
And my question was, just off the bat, for 6,000 individuals that first of all are not recognized as official law enforcement, as has now been declared, and are now being disbanded, did you need the German vehicles at a time where the South African police force themselves are using Nissan hard bodies that people can outrun with most vehicles? Like, we'll have a conversation at a separate time around what vehicles should go with the police force, because there's a very clear argument for, I mean, you can't be chasing down a Porsche 911 in a VW Polo. That's not going to work. You know what I mean? So I'm.
But they're not chasing down anything. Just to be clear.
This is my thing, right? So I'm not against the police having the German vehicles and the fast vehicles for certain reasons or for certain things. In growing up, I mean, we used to have what, I don't know if it still exists, we used to have something called the Flying Squad, where they would have the higher powered vehicles.
There was a radio show.
Right? And then the normal vehicles were the standard police monitoring and patrol vehicles, weren't the flying squad vehicles, because those were meant for performance. I understand that. My question, and this is the question as part of the unfiltered opinion, is, were the CPW worth it? Was this, let's not go with the 4 billion rand estimate, let's go with what we kind of know at the moment, the direct allocations and the training facilities, at least 2.7 billion rand.
No.
So call it 2.5, or even call it 2 billion call if we're discounting it, right? Was 2 billion rand expenditure worth it for 6,000 police wardens that at this stage are not qualified to be police individuals?
Nope. You could have bought the president a second plane.
We'd love to get your thoughts on that. Let us know what you think about the unfiltered opinion. Again, nothing against our police force, nothing against the hardworking service members of the Republic of South Africa. We're just trying to figure out whether or not we could have empowered the South African police service in a different way. That's the unfiltered opinion of the week. That's the show for the week. Remember, folks, investing isn't hard. Just try it.
The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.